Back to My Garden, episode 89.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
Attention garden lovers. Do you want to save time, save money, and have your most amazing garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from passionate gardeners around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. It's finally here. 99 remarkably clever gardening ideas that you can use immediately. It's a free report. You get instant access. It's an epic list of tips, hacks, and gardening shortcuts just for you. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/clever. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another edition of Back to My Garden. And I'm excited about this one, folks. We're going down to Los Angeles, California. Shelley is a talented garden designer and feng shui advisor. Her company, Harmony Gardens, helps clients to create beautiful spaces and a lucky life. Shelley is the author of Secrets of the Land, Designing Harmonious Gardens with Feng Shui. She teaches, is a landscape architect, a lecturer, and a consultant, and she blogs at harmonygardens.net. I'm going to learn a lot today. I can feel it. We have a lot to talk about. Please welcome Miss Shelley Sparks. Hi, Shelley.
Hi. Nice to be with you.
I'm excited that you're here. For many personal reasons, other than just making a great podcast, because my wife is into feng shui, and now I get to figure out what it all means.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's great. I can't wait to talk about that.
I gave you a little brief introduction, and I want to get to know you better, and our listeners want to hear your stories. Shelley, take a minute or two, relax. Tell us a little bit about your background, and how did you get into gardening?
Well, you know, I started gardening when my children were small, many years ago, before I was even a landscape architect. And when I liked, you know, growing things to eat at home and things like that, and I made all the funny mistakes that most people make. I really was hesitant to get into gardening at first because I always seemed to kill my houseplants. So I used to think that I had a brown thumb. And what I've learned over the years is that really what that equated to was the fact that I didn't take care of my plants. I didn't nurture them. I didn't work with them. And I didn't relate to them. And that's really why things perish so quickly in my presence. But over years, I've worked in the garden, and I've really found that it is a healing space. And that's why I made it my mission in life to work with people and try to engage them in their garden. So when I'm designing a landscape, I'm not just designing out in a tower that's absent of everything related to the client. I'm really trying to engage my client to find the plants that they love so that they're going to get involved with their garden, because that's the only way that the healing effects of the garden can take place.
Fantastic. Dear listener, there's going to be a lot of resources and good stuff mentioned. I'm taking notes for you. Come over to the blog at backtomygarden.com. Make sure you follow Shelley on social media. She has a great Twitter feed at Shelley's Garden, and that's SHELLEYSGARDEN. And check out Shelley's website at www.harmonygardens.net. Your book, is it on Amazon or through your website?
It's both on Amazon and through my website.
You can search by title or by author,
yes.
Shelley Sparks, and I'll have a link up for sure from Amazon. Where to start? Let me tell you, I'm instantly on thin ice because you use words like healing space, very kinesthetic words. Yeah. And I've had garden designers on who talk texture, vertical, contrast, all visual words. And I seem to be like this lump of coal. I don't get any of it. I don't have that magic power. I said the word, I can't even remember. How did I describe it? You have the ability to sort of see a space as it could be rather than the way it is.
Yes, exactly.
Is that a talent that can be developed?
Yes, you know, it really can, because when I started in landscape architecture school, I'll tell you a kind of an odd story. More than 30 years ago, I decided to change my career. And I was doing social work. So something as far away from what I'm doing as possible almost. And I just started taking classes in different areas, and I took a class in landscape architecture. And this was when I couldn't draw a stick figure, I had never done any design, and I didn't know the names of any plants. The only thing I had done is grown zucchini in my garden, zucchini and tomatoes, which gardeners know are the easiest things in the world. And somewhere in my first class, I had a prophetic dream that really I believed in and led me to pursue landscape architecture. So all of the designing skills, all of the plant names, all of the seeing spaces are skills that you can acquire.
Wow. Wow, I just got some encouragement, because Latin, oh my goodness, it's so hard sometimes.
I know.
I do these wonderful podcasts with wonderful plantsmen, and they just remember every piece of Latin, and I'm taking notes, and I'm missing. When you try to Google something that you've spelled wrong, it's not very good.
Oh, no, it doesn't go well for you.
So you had a real leap of faith to get into something like that.
I did. I had a leap of faith, and I've had a few of those over the course of my lifetime. And of course, feng shui actually ended up being the same sort of thing. I must say that I kind of fell into it. At the time that I started studying more than 20 years ago, I took a class because I read something about increasing balance and harmony. And I felt that that's what I do in my gardens when I design gardens. So I thought, well, maybe I can learn something from this. And I got hooked, and I ended up studying with one of the foremost feng shui masters in the world. Becoming a senior disciple of his, and practicing and then writing this book under his guidance. So I, just seem to, that it seems to me that when you're on a path that is correct and right, the doors just open for you.
Yeah, you hear people use the word, quote unquote, it feels right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like the human body can tell. And, you know, I have a smattering of physics. That's what I went to university for before med school. And so I understand, you know, this table I'm leaning on is not really a table. You know, it's a bunch of swirling atoms and electron energy. But that doesn't explain why there's like models of fish around my house or coins hanging on strings.
Well, let me just say something about what you just said, because what you just said is something that I teach all the time, and people wonder about why I said healing as it relates to plants or the garden, and that your physics example is the perfect example for that, because those molecules they're swirling around your desk, but you know you're sitting right next to them. So the way that your desk, those molecules are going to be interchanging with your molecules, and the same thing happens with plants. The same same thing happens with, you know, the various things that are placed for particular purpose, for particular purposes with feng shui, adjusting the feng shui in mind.
I just had that feeling like there's no way we're going to cram anything into a 30-minute podcast because somebody goes, well, I don't know anything about feng shui. And I go, well, go rent a movie called What the Bleep Do We Know? If you want like an accessible movie to get you into the background of physics and particle theory and feng shui. And
yeah, that's kind of the way it is. It you know, feng shui is energy. It's about that force. And, you know, everybody feels and has that sense. I mean, I know this must have happened to you when you walk into a garden that's really beautiful, but it doesn't, for somehow the space doesn't feel right. And then you'll walk into a garden that's kind of like, looks like it's a little messy and overgrown or something like that, but it just feels like home. And houses often feel that way to people as well. And basically what you're feeling is the feng shui of the space.
Let's give the listeners a bite-sized piece that they can relate to. We have a lot of people who live in cities and have patio gardens, very small spaces. Is it easier to design a small space or a big space?
You know, honestly, it doesn't make much difference. It's really all about, you know, all about the what you want to have around you. Because I've lived in, you know, places that have really huge spaces, and I've lived in places where I just had a balcony. And no matter where it was, I've worked really hard to create, you know, my vision of Eden there. And that's really what I want all of your listeners to understand, that their vision of Eden is their unique vision. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's all good with that. The biggest thing that I think I achieve with most of my clients is that you want to have things around you that you love. So you want to have plants. I mean, when I'm showing clients pictures of plants, because I insist that all of my clients take an active involvement in the design of their garden. And when I'm showing pictures of plants to my clients, you know, proposing this plant or that plant, unless they really look at it and say, I love it, or, you know, then it's not something that we include. If they look at a plant and they say, wow, I love it, then that's a plant they should have. And I really want to encourage everybody that's listening to this to really look at everything that's in your environment. I mean, inside or outside doesn't really matter in terms of feng shui, but inside or outside, you really need to have things that support you. And the things that you love are going to support you.
It must be uniquely challenging in your career because you live in Los Angeles, so you have clients that are often inheriting a space from a previous owner.
Uh-huh.
And then plus you're in one of the most water-challenged, rained, drought-stricken areas of the country.
Right.
What's that like for you?
you know, it's been, in some ways, it's been challenging. But in other ways, it's been really exciting because I get to learn about new plants. In the last probably 3 years, I have learned so many new plants. And there's in Los Angeles, you know, we live in paradise here in a lot of ways because everything grows here. So we've got such a variety. Options of variety. It's really almost anything that the nurseries will grow, we can use. So it's just amazing the new plants that have come into our ability to use here in Los Angeles. And I'll tell you, I'm having a field day using them.
I just had an aha moment while you were talking. It's almost too much. It's narrowing the focus, not choosing more, right? It's a filtering process.
Yeah. It is. It is. So usually we were talking briefly before we went on air about drought tolerant. And usually there's a lot of gardens here. You know, here in Los Angeles, the Department of Water and Power actually pays people to get rid of their lawns and replace them with drought-tolerant planting. And a lot of times people think that drought-tolerant planting just is cactus. And there's so much variety that we can offer a person that I have to really start by limiting which general direction we're going to go in. So I'll talk to them about, well, do we want to use natives or do we want to do we want to use Mediterranean type plants or do we want to use succulents or cactus? And sometimes you can do some combinations of those different types of general types of plants. And I do, but you have to kind of be careful with it because of their different watering needs.
Oh, that's true. Just because it can handle the, you know, something that grows in the Caribbean may handle the heat, but it may come from a more rainfall than you're used to in California.
Exactly. Exactly. And we irrigate everything here in California. So, you know, right now we're doing a lot of drip irrigation.
My wife has taken a few classes on feng shui, and when we moved into our new house, she went around saying, oh, we need a fish here and coins on a cord here. And, you know, being a guy, I had tons to do that month, so I didn't pay a lot of attention. But it's fascinating because there are techniques to kind of help with the energy in your house. And then she's starting now to do stuff out in her garden. I find it a little daunting and overwhelming. Did you find that in the beginning?
No, actually, I didn't. I actually found that feng shui made it easier to arrange the garden because it gives you some parameters to start with. And you know, really, honestly, what you're doing is responding to the land. Again, you know, when I'm doing designs, there's three factors that I take into account. My client, the architecture, and the land. And so those are the three things that, you know, most people, again, you have when you were saying, oh, you know, you've got this blank canvas. It's, you know, it can be overwhelming when you're a gardener to just kind of start to figure out how you're going to organize spaces and what are you going to do. But what I like to do is I like to start with concepts. So I'm doing a garden right now that is on an area that is right near a very open area, native, wild area. And so we're continuing that, so kind of borrowing the open spaces into this garden and doing a lot of natives and some Mediterranean plants. And so, you know, you really have to read each space and house. If the architecture of this particular house was different, I would have gone in a different direction. If the client was, you know, didn't like outdoor spaces, didn't like woodsy kind of things, didn't like natural looking things, I would have gone in a different direction. So all three aspects have to be accounted for. And when you're doing that, when you're listening to your land and you're looking at your design, you really can't go too wrong with the feng shui of the land.
Shelley, you're a writer, you're a teacher, a lecturer, you're working all the time with clients, you live in one of the busiest cities on earth. Do you have any time to garden yourself?
I do, but not much. I'm one of my clients that says, get me low maintenance. Yeah. But on the other side of that, I'm also wanting to try different plants to make sure that they'll be successful in my clients' gardens. So And I'm also one of those terrible clients that falls in love with every other plant and wants to have one.
I love it. You'd get along well with my wife. She's almost incapable of visiting a garden center and leaving with empty hands.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. I've had people say, oh, I should come over and look at your garden. And most people that come to my garden are just, you know, they really love it. But, of course, you probably know the same thing. I see the flaws. It's hard for me to show my garden off because I can see, oh, well, that, you know, I should have had those plants. And maybe I'll show it to them in another year when that plant is fully grown in or, It's easier for me to criticize my own work, my own garden. Yeah.
Let's take a minute to thank our sponsors and then come back and play five quick questions. What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow a massive garden powered by fish? Find out more and discover the secrets to building fish-powered gardens at www.backtomygarden.com/fish. Are you concerned about toxic chemicals, GMOs, and frankenfood? Don't panic. Grow organic. Discover my new resource for organic gardeners. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/myorganic. I was just glancing at the clock and our time is whipping by. Now's the time in the show where we play a game called Five Quick Questions.
Okay.
This is your chance to share wisdom and experience with novice rookie gardeners. Are you ready to play?
Yes.
And I've changed the questions up for 2015, so I'll keep you on your toes.
Okay.
Question one. This is the category of bloopers. What's the funniest mistake that you've made in a garden that you're willing to admit to publicly?
I don't know about funniest mistake, but I think one of the more common mistakes that I've made is oversizing pots, mm-hmm. making them, you know, seeing a space, thinking, oh, that needs a huge pot, and then ordering the pot and the pot coming in and thinking, uh-oh, where does this go?
Wow.
So, yeah, arrange everything. I mean, you can always rearrange things, but that's probably the most common thing that's happened to me. Yeah,
you know, I thought you were going to say the exact opposite.
Really?
I tend to jam way too much stuff into teeny tiny pots.
Oh yeah. Well, I have a little bit of a tendency to overorder on plants too. But it, you know, again, you have to gauge your client and the amount of an amount of space that they want or have too. Yeah.
Challenging thing with the bigger pots.
Yeah.
It reaches a point where a human has a tough time moving them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what dollies are for.
You know you're in a new level when you have a dolly for your pots in your garden. That's right.
Yes.
Question two. What's a skill that you have in the garden that you're really proud of or something unique that you have a skill in?
I would say the one skill that I'm really grateful to have is just communicating with my plants. Mm. And I think that I know that that's a skill that everybody can acquire once you just start really relating to them as other sentient beings. A lot of times, if I'm going on a trip, I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks, I always go around my garden and talk to my plants, tell them to hang on, I'll be back. if they're not going to get the particular care that they're used to, or, you know, maybe they might not get as watered as often as I do, and that they just have to hang on to their energy.
I've forgotten the name of the Japanese scientist. There's a clip in the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, yes, where they shout at water molecules, yes, and put it under the electron microscope, and the energy you put into the water gets, it changes the properties of the water molecule.
Yeah.
And I go, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's physics.
You think on a level, I mean, it's beyond the scope of this conversation, just how so many people are so stressed out and they're eating animal byproducts that are so stressed out and they live their life 19 hours a day so stressed out. I think you said it in the opening line, it's designing a healing space.
Yeah, and that's what I think anything... Anybody that, again, that's why I really try to get my clients to love, you know, to find plants that they love in their garden. Because I know once they have a plant that they love, they're going to start tending to it. And once they start tending to it, they're going to have the healing by effects of relating to that plant.
Oh, I just had another aha. So then it goes from being Shelley's garden where they paid money for it to this is my space. They take it's ownership.
Absolutely. That's what, you know, that's my demands. Not demands, but that's what I really like to do with my residential clients.
Then they get involved in the watering and the pruning and the maintenance, and it becomes the therapy of
right.
tending the space.
Absolutely.
I'm just nodding along like no one can see me nodding, and I'm waving my hands in the air. I had this giant hot pepper plant last year that kind of became my buddy, and I'd move him around the garden. And, you know, I'm at that stage where I still have emotional attachments to plants that I purchase or that I grow. I understand.
Well, I would hope that everyone does.
Yeah. Big broad scope of conversation here, but question three is about websites. Now, I want all the listeners to check out Shelley's website and resources at harmonygardens.net. Do you have any favorite gardening resource sites or landscape design sites that you could suggest?
Yeah, well, I mean, I love for plants. I always there's a couple of them that I there are my go-to places. One of them's really located here in Southern California, so. I don't know that I recommend that because it's just located here and that's local. But Monrovia, I know Monrovia.com has really good recommendations for plants, and I know they're distributed at least throughout the United States and probably in Canada as well. And another site that I really like is Dave's Garden, mm-hmm. davesgarden.com, because he has a lot of really great information and a lot of unusual plants as well. So I use that as well as a resource.
Love it. Good, good, good. Now, question four is the flip side, is a book. Do you have a particular favorite gardening book that you love and refer to?
Yeah, my go-to gardening book is Sunset Western Garden Book.
Yeah,
it's and they have a national book also as well. So it covers all the different zones. And one of the reasons I really like Sunset Western Garden Book is because they break it into subzones. You know, you have there's so many different climatic differences, even. For instance, here in between here in Los Angeles and San Diego, and even parts of Los Angeles are in different microzones, and so that really helps me to pinpoint the exact climate zone that a plant will thrive in. And so, I don't know that I know that's not going to be available to people around the world, but I would encourage them to find the books in their areas that really can help them determine what microclimate the plants are going to thrive in.
Microclimates are fascinating because it can be raining in one part of LA and not raining in another, and
absolutely.
Even a yard could have a microclimate.
Yeah, exactly. Even yards can have microclimates, but it can be extremely dramatic here in Los Angeles because we have seaside, people that are next to the beach. And then I just designed a garden for a place that is, is right on the beach. Contrasting that out here in the San Fernando Valley where I live, it's hot. It's really hot, and we don't have as much of that ocean influence. So there's the climate is really very different.
Living in a four-season climate, the part of the garden that's sunny in May is less sunny in September, when you need the sun the most. So you have to plan, considering the entire season as well.
Yes. I lived in Toronto, and I loved the four seasons when I lived there. But as an adult, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I understand.
I don't know.
When you're
playing a ball game,
there's this new phenomenon of this zone pushing and four season gardening where people have said, "I'm going to try." And I tried to build a cold frame, but it blew away in the fall. So I have to do some more anchoring next year.
Yeah, it does. You can push the envelopes, especially if you take really good care of the plant and give it exactly what it wants. But it takes another level of concern and involvement to do that.
Question number five is a fun one, Shelley. Picture your brand new novice rookie gardener. It's their very first season. And they come to you and they say, "Can you give me one big tip on using feng shui in my garden?"
Oh.
This is the big tip.
The big tip. I can give you a great tip. Go to your entry. Probably the most important place of your entire property is the entry to your home. And think about what you would do if the king of your country, the prime minister, the president, if you like them, would visit your home. What would you do to doll it up and make it absolutely fabulous? Because you are the most important visitor that is ever going to come to your home. So do that for yourself.
Wow. So for those of you who enter into your house through the garage, you might want to move the piles of the garage junk.
Yeah. You know, when I'm doing feng shui for my but you always want to go to the architectural front door. That's a good point. Because if you enter through the garage, that's one thing. But the architectural front door is where the feng shui, where all energy enters your home. And so that's the point that I'm really referring to.
I love it. Clearing away the piles of uselessness and releasing that out into somebody else to use.
Right. And also if there's plants that are blocking your doorway, that should not be. You know, I've had an experience where I've walked down streets that of, people I don't know and, in a neighborhood with a friend, and I've pointed to houses and say, "I bet a person like such and such lives there," because one of my friends pointed such a house out to me, and I said, "I bet an agrifolia, a person that's afraid to leave their home lives there." And she said, "How did you know that?" And it was just clear; they were just blocked in. Their whole front was just all closed down. You couldn't even see where to get in. So people, your front entry and the way the front entry to your home and the way that you see your front, the front of your home, talks a lot about who you are and what face you're putting out into the world. And whether that's inviting, whether it's tells people to go away, or whether you're gonna, it's highly protective. There's many different ways that we express ourselves to the world, and and whether we invite those the world's energy into our, you know, into our spaces. And that's really what your entry is all about, your entry in the front face of your home.
Wow, wow, wow. Dear listener, I told you this was going to be a good episode. Make sure you follow Shelley on Twitter at Shelley's Garden. Visit her on the web at www.harmonygardens.net and pick up a copy of her book on Amazon, Secrets of the Land, Designing Harmonious Gardens with Feng Shui. Think of this podcast as a starting point, and Shelley can definitely direct you to transforming your space. Shelley, you've been a tremendous guest.
Oh, thank you for asking all these wonderful questions. I love to pass on information that's going to help people in their lives.
I want to invite you to have the last word to the listeners around the world today. Can you leave us with either a pearl of wisdom or a note of encouragement?
Okay. Yes. Don't be afraid of plants. You know, in your garden, if you invite a plant, I told you that I thought I had a brown thumb. Well, occasionally I do. When I fall in love with a plant, I invite it into my yard, but sometimes it dies, and then I'll try it again. But after that, it's like it had its chance, live or die. So don't be afraid of trying different things and seeing if they work for you. Make sure that you surround yourself with things that you love, and make your home and your garden the place of peace, harmony, and beauty.
Absolutely brilliant. Thank you for being on the show, Shelley.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Dave.